That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
What's up, Comic Book Nation? Welcome to this bonus episode where we are talking all things Spider-Man Far From Home. Thwip, thwip, thwip. We are going to be doing our full review and spoilers discussion of Spider-Man Far From Home. So if you have not seen the movie, this is not the episode to probably listen to. Go back, check out our spoiler-free review of Spider-Man Far From Home, which was a couple episodes before this. But if you've seen the movie, you've come to the right place, because we're about to break it all down for you. So, just for a quick survey around the room, I think all of us have seen it. Matt, have you? My co-host, Matthew Aguilar, is here.
It's a buddy.
And also on the couch is Brandon Davis, part of the original Comic Book Nation Trinity. And, of course, over here in the cut is producer Jim Viscardi. He's waiting with all kinds of, I'm sure, comments and observations about Spider-Man.
I have so many.
Yeah, I know. I could tell when you came in, you were lit up like you were already on it. Matt, did you see Spider-Man?
I have not.
Okay, that's right. I forgot. We did this. We planned this.
But I read all the spoilers, so it's fine.
You're the outside man observer who can be out here who hasn't.
How do we have a guy on the spoiler-filled podcast who hasn't seen the movie?
Oh, yeah, I read our articles on the site and got the whole movie. There are people who
I know listen to the show, follow our site, who do not care about spoilers, but love to just listen along. And interact.
I also wanted questions from a person who hasn't seen the movie,
right?
As an outside observer, which is sometimes good to have.
I was just curious, like what the choice was. There had to be a choice there.
Oh yeah. Plus, we just like Matt, BD. Why are you trying to?
And I love Matt. No, I was just wondering. Yeah. Anyway, back on track.
Yes. All right, so now that we've approved Matt being here.
Wow, thanks, Brandon.
See, that third seat tries to do you dirty, man. Why is he here?
Why is he here?
Because I've seen Spider-Man.
That's true. Walkie Dead's over. Get him out of here. No, I'm kidding.
Why you're asking why?
Brandon Davis is here because he has seen Spider-Man multiple times and has done extensive interviews with the cast, crew, and the people in charge of putting out this movie, which brings up another good point. We will, in addition to this spoiler discussion episode of Spider-Man Far From Home, we have a special edition coming up this weekend.
Sunday,
which will be Brandon Davis's interviews with Kevin Feige of Marvel Studios, Amy Pascal of Sony. We got some good insights from them about Far From Home and the larger implications of this movie, which we will be discussing. And so you want to be sure to listen to that, because that is scoopage you're not going to hear anywhere else. And we're bringing it to you here on Comic Book Nation, mostly because we love you, slightly for profit. It's always the same. But until then, let's talk about Spider-Man Far From Home. So, Brandon Davis reviewed Spider-Man Far From Home for comicbook.com, and now he can give you his full spoiler-filled thoughts on the movie.
I thought it was great. It's my favorite Spider-Man movie.
For sure.
I know making a claim like that always has backlash at me. I don't care. It's great. Start to finish. I think it gets better as it goes. I think it starts great, ends even better. I don't think a Spider-Man movie has balanced his want to be a teenager and want to be a hero better than this movie has any of them. Homecoming did a great job of it. Spider-Man 2 did a pretty good job of it. But this was the best we've seen of that. Tom Holland is the best Spider-Man. I don't think you can fight me on that. I think Tom Holland is the best Peter Parker and Spider-Man. He does both so well. I think the villain here was a lot of fun, especially for the world we're in right now. He was very relevant to the real world, and I know everybody always wants to find real world messages in movies. I don't, but if you want to, you can in this one. Top to bottom, it's a great, and it was full of surprises. You know, Mysterio from the comics is full of shit. Can I say that on this podcast? Oh. I said it.
Well, you said it now. It's a little too late.
but he's a liar, and going into this movie, you're like, oh, okay, we know he's going to turn out to be a villain, but the way they do it was still surprising.
Mm-hmm.
The shift in Jake Gyllenhaal's performance when the illusion comes down on the bar is amazing. Mm-hmm. It almost was Joker-esque, where he just puts his hand up, and he's like, well, it was that easy. And his voice changes, his demeanor changes, his facial expression changes.
But even the way like he's lit, like he's lit from below.
Evil. Yeah. He looks evil, yep. Which is John Watts showing off at this point. Because if you remember when we realized that the vulture was Liz's dad in Homecoming, the lighting there, when the light turned mm-hmm. green, was genius. So I love that about it. And I just think it's really clever. I know none of this is intentional from the beginning, but it is seamless when you do it now. The tie back to Iron Man 1 with William Ginter-Riva, the guy who Obadiah Stane yelled, he built it in a cave with a box of scraps, tying him into bringing the original actor back 11 years later to make him a part of Mysterio's team.
Not just an actor, Ralphie from A Christmas Story.
But yeah.
Which is so cool. It's just levels and levels of deep cuts.
And then bringing it back to Civil War and putting, and it almost threw me out when they had Quentin Beck at the Civil War scene with the barf. Yeah. I was like, all right, you're making that up. But it still works. Like, we never saw back there. We don't know if he was there. You go back and watch Civil War, there's probably a space where you'll say, oh, that's where he should have been. But it worked. You kind of laugh at it, but it's a great tie-in, and it helps explain the story.
It was great for Mysterio in a way to tie him in to the actual
They weave MCU this into so many lanes of the MCU's history, and I thought that, like, I know it's not intentional from the beginning, and it could be even better if it was. But there's no way Endgame would have been better if they knew where they were going. Mm-hmm. But they still weaved it in and made it work. Yeah. I thought this did the same thing in its own on a smaller, respectable scale for Spider-Man.
My only real like negative comment on this is that it gets to a point where it really leans into the Iron Man of it all.
Right, the AC/DC playing.
Yeah, that was a fun moment, but it's just. Like, I get it. Iron Man is everywhere. And that's a huge, that plays into a huge, you know, part of Peter's development as a character throughout sort of this entire movie. But it got to the point where, like, you were going to, you know, they were entering in a new city or whatever, and you saw a picture of Tony or you saw a picture of Iron Man, and you were just like, oh, okay. Like, I get it. Like, he had enough.
Yeah, but I mean, this effect it is everywhere. To be fair, I said the same thing. Like, I thought that was a little heavy handed. I mean, but. It does fit the theme of the film, which is Tony's legacy towards Peter and like what that means after the blip and Tony being gone and him having to step up and try to fill that void and ultimately coming away from the film saying like, I'm not going to be Iron Man. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to be Spider-Man.
But it also sets the stage for Spider-Man 3 to give you Spider-Man without Tony Stark. Mm-hmm. This has been a two-part origin for Peter Parker, really, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. He was coached by Tony in Homecoming, and now the events of Endgame impacted the first movie.
Well, right.
It had to.
Everyone keeps saying that Tony is basically Peter, the MCU's Uncle Ben. Yeah.
What I will say, though, is that from general impressions I've read online, most are glowing of this movie, but that actually tends to be the biggest knock, is that it doesn't really feel like a full Spider-Man movie. It feels like it's the Iron Man Spider-Man show, and regardless of what you say about Homecoming, whether you love it or not, it's at the top of your list or anything, Homecoming is an unabashedly Spider-Man movie. Yes, Iron Man is involved, but it's actually one of the big things when Homecoming was released was that people got an impression Tony Stark would be more involved from the trailers, and it turned out he was only kind of a sliver of the movie, which is way it should be, because it's not Iron Man's
movie. So let me ask
you,
though, why... I'm a big Iron Man fan, so I don't mind. And I think it's cool. We've seen Peter Parker before in two different franchises. We've seen Spider-Man in two different franchises. I have no problem changing the story, eliminating. I mean, Uncle Ben is there. Sure. He's got the briefcase. We know that happened, but that's not the big influence Tony Stark is. And there's no secret. He's basically replacing Uncle Ben. But why? I'm just curious. I'm not criticizing you for it, but why is it important to you to have less Tony Stark, less Iron Man? Because I'm into it. I think it's cool.
This thing, I don't mind it. To me, it felt just a little bit too much.
Well, I mean, this is the curse of like most MCU sequel films and solo franchises down the board. Like ever since Iron Man 2, mm-hmm. it's always this weird kind of mix of telling a continuing kind of self-contained story from the first film, but then introducing all of these wider MCU connections that it has to fit in. And sometimes it works, like Winter Soldier works, when you begin to get into this larger thing of who the Winter Soldier is, mm-hmm. what that's about, his connections to other MCU things that then develop, like all that stuff. Or sometimes it's a little heavy-handed, like Iron Man 2, and trying to get the Avengers connections off the ground, Black Widow in there. And this is kind of not the stumble that Iron Man 2 is, but also not like the home run necessarily that
somewhere in the middle,
Winter Soldier is. It's somewhere in the middle, yeah.
Well, but to me...
But I think they get points, just let me finish by saying, like, John Watts gets points because he uses humor to kind of put this stuff up front, and that's the whole thing with the MacGuffin of this film is the Edith... you know, weapon, even and it stands for Even hero. Dead, I'm the Hero.
So good.
Which is, like, Tony's parting gift, but it's also straight-up, like, commentary on the movie itself. Yeah. Is Even Dead, like, Iron Man still is, like, the like a main focus of this
which
movie.
Which is great. If that's
but also,
great
I mean, you have to give it the full circle. This is the last movie of the Infinity Saga, which was launched by who?
Iron Man. No, yeah. I get it. But to me, the Spider-Man parts of this movie... So the teenage romance, the antics there, you know, all of like the tried and true Peter Parker things that you would hope and expect were far and away some of the best parts. I mean, down to this movie to me nails everything about Spider-Man, even down to the fight choreography and you know, the way that you would expect Spider-Man to move and act and fight and whatever. Is hit on the head perfectly. Like it takes everything, every critique that you've had about, like I would say Spider-Man as a character in all of those other movies is almost perfected to me, I feel in this movie. And it gets me excited now for the next one because now I think we'll truly get that unabashed, just straight up Spider-Man movie that, you know, we've all been wanting.
I do think one thing I think the Russos may have done a little bit better, and I rewatched Homecoming, it was even a little bit more strong in Homecoming than it was in Far From Home, but the quips. Spider-Man almost never shuts up. He's almost like Deadpool, where he's always being sarcastic. I think the Russo brothers and the writers there, Stephen McFeely and Christopher Marcus, did a little bit of a better job than either of the Spider-Man movies have done of making him, and they didn't have him on screen for as long,
right.
But every time he was doing something, he had a quip. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't remember everybody's names when he's saving the Guardians of the Galaxy. When he's like, oh, you're riding a horse to Valkyrie when she picks him up with the Infinity Gauntlet in an Endgame. And I think that those moments, there's a couple of them in Far From Home, but I think we could see a little bit more of that because he always has something to say, even when he's getting his ass kicked.
But I think
that's the best part of it.
But amazing. I think, though, Peter is maturing.
Andrew Garfield does that really well.
But Peter is maturing so much in this movie that I feel the quips like that would feel a bit out of place considering everything else that's going on.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Like the quips and stuff are fun, but for this movie, I think it would have been a little bit more out of place considering the growing up.
Yeah, that I think it's understated in this movie, but very well done how much words like angst and like trauma and things like that are at play in this because it's the major theme of this movie. It's not just, and I like that the Iron Man thing isn't just Spider-Man. It's about Iron Man's entire legacy in the MCU and when he's gone, what that vacuum of power is kind of looking like. And that's what connects Peter and Mysterio's stories is basically, Iron Man's gone and that vacancy has affected these two people in certain kind of ways. And now that the vacancy is there, one of them is trying to step up and fill it. Mysterio through this very kind of, cheat way of doing it and manipulating, but Peter trying to earn it. But they both have these qualities of kind of the angst and trauma of having dealt with Tony Stark and like what's left behind after he's gone. For Mysterio, it's having had his kind of genius knocked and kind of having triggered him and triggering this kind of like manic, whatever you want to call it, evilness. And in Peter, it's of course the kind of angst and uncertainty of like who he should be, where he belongs now in this new status quo and all of that. So it's not overbearing, but I think it's well done. And I think it's going to make rewatches of the film better when you kind of know all that going in, when you see who Quentin Beck is pretending to be. And like at first, and kind of really,
I mean, Nick Fury too.
That. Yeah,
there's a moment early in the film where Nick Fury references Kree sleeper cells, and it seems like a throwaway line just to get them from the door to the car. And then at the end, you realize, oh, that's not Nick Fury talking; that's Talos talking, because he's thinking about Kree sleeper cells.
Well, all right. So we'll, let's dive into that for a little bit.
You want to talk post-credit scenes? All right. Well,
I do want to add one thing to what Kobe said. I think Tom Holland can have chemistry with anybody.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Tom Holland and Zendaya are great. Tom Holland and Jake Gyllenhaal are great.
Zendaya was one of the MVPs of this movie.
Yeah.
She as great. This, and I love this new MJ way more than any comic version MJ that we've ever had, any other movie version MJ, this is the best MJ.
She was the highlight of.
I kind of like Kirsten Dunst's MJ at the time.
I mean, yeah, at the time. You look at Upside Down Kiss, but well, like
right, even
but
then, though, but I couldn't.
But
take her.
I think I said this morning, today. Where that first Spider-Man movie and this Spider-Man movie are both movies that are products of their time,
right?
Thing, and so you know they serve different things, but I am more interested in seeing how that character grows up. Mm-hmm. Than I am in.
They're so good at being awkward together.
In yeah, seeing
that was like my favorite character. Thing is how good Zendaya and Tom Holland are at being.
But what about Liz? All of a sudden he's just. I mean, it's high school. Like you like someone every week, whatever. Right. But like all of a sudden he's all about MJ. When one movie ago he was all about Liz. But I did ask about that.
Oh, Brandon Davis. If anybody on this stage, you should be the one to understand that.
It's just funny. But I asked about that.
I asked John Watts,
and I was like, do you want to, like, did Liz get blipped? What happened? And he was like, well, if she didn't get blipped, then Laura Harrier can actually play a character her age because she was 5 years older than everybody in the first movie.
Dude, he swiped left. He was like, I like it. She's hot. Dad's too crazy. Swipe left.
And that's I not like how her. It works. You don't swipe after you meet them, Kobe.
I don't. Anyway, okay. So you just proved my point. Yeah, I just really said did. You, Brandon Davis, of anybody up here should understand how this works and how quick you can move on. And you're like,
listen, just because I'm the only non-married person on this panel here. All right.
All right.
Can I live my life?
We're going to keep your Tinder stories off the podcast. For now. For now. But like, yeah, he moved on, man. It's high
all right.
School.
Well, let's just talk about the Nick Fury thing real quick before we start going back. So,
he has not been a Skrull the whole time.
Wait, is that what you think?
When we got the line in the trailer, the B word,
please.
You've been to space from the get go. I thought was incredibly out of character.
Yeah, that's what for, but I for think that what for that Nick better. Fury,
and so when you get that, and then there's a little nods here and there, like you said, like there's that Kree, you know, sleeper cell throwaway line. And then when you get the reveal that it's basically been Talos, for what we can only assume is in just this movie.
It is just this movie.
Being Nick Fury was fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it's just one because. Ben Mendelsohn as Talos is like one of my favorite things about if not my favorite thing about Captain Marvel. Like he is just so good as that character that just to see him pop up in this way is so great. And I think for a while there was a little bit of concern of how much these Spider-Man movies fall in the Marvel camp versus the Sony camp and who's got control over what and how much are they going to let you do. I am shocked at the amount that Marvel put into this movie to further their ongoing MCU narrative. When it didn't seem like, especially in Homecoming, you got it, but not nearly as much as what you got here.
Like this would be required viewing, right?
If you, I mean, yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, 1,000%.
I mean, this is the end. This is the epilogue to Phase 3. Like it's.
But
like,
the craziest thing is like, so you get that reveal and then you get the reveal of Nick Fury in space.
Mm-hmm. Has to be building sword.
Doing something.
That's on the peak. It has to be.
Yeah, let's talk about that. First, the Talos thing is great because it does. I mean, it's great because that scene is so funny. And what I love about Talos is Ben Mendelsohn kind of uses it as like a satire about acting itself. And like he's always kind of making reference to his own performances, which is what the scene in the car is, which is great because he's also arguing with his wife, which is funny. So it's like two actors like who are married, like having this argument about like performance. And it makes the bitch please line so great because it's not Nick Fury saying something that's just like unabashedly Sam Jackson-ish.
No.
It's like Talos's interpretation of what he thinks Nick Fury is like. It's like saying stuff like that, which is just adds a level of like very good meta humor to it. But yeah, the orbital station thing was, I wrote about this last night. It's on the site. about how it sets up a potentially new story arc for the MCU. The sword thing, I mean, it seems like it's sword. It seems like it's not just a ship, but like an orbital station.
To me, that feels like a gamble. Like, I think they can retroactively say that that was sword, but that's assuming that when they made this movie, the Fox thing was going to go through.
Because that's Abigail, like,
Brand.
Yeah, is an X-Man. Like, right. That's an X-Men character.
She wore the sword.
Wasn't
she an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. already?
No, she was, everything sword was established in Astonishing X-Men and fell into the Fox.
Which is kind of why I don't want that to happen. I don't want
Fury. Where were the Watchers? Were the Watchers Fox?
The Watchers were a deal that was made to include the Watchers in the similar way that they had that weird barter agreement.
Interesting. With Ego, right? That was like kind of the same deal, right?
So, it's interesting. I mean, maybe they shot it late.
Yeah, or it could have just been a shot that they shot. I mean, it was entirely visual effects, so I can't imagine, like, where you look at the shawarma scene where that was almost entirely practical.
Yeah, that's true.
Shot on a set. Like, that was a scene that was almost entirely...
Like, let's say it is real. Like, let's say, sword-wise, like, let's say they come out later and go, like, this is the beginning of Sword. I hope it doesn't lean very much on Fury, like, that they involve him a ton in that process. Mm-hmm. Because, honestly, too, I love Abigail Brand as a character, and she's, like, amazing. She's an amazing character.
Here's the thing. Because of Captain Marvel has spun up so much of the usual MCU cosmic order.
Yep.
There's a lot to take away from this scene. Like, first, if it's Sword and he's like, what kind of vessel he's on, like, there's something he's doing. It makes sense in the sense that, like, after everything that's happened, like, Fury would be the one person who would deal with it in this way and would say, okay, like, I've been keeping my one eye on Earth and doing all this, but we are so ridiculous.
But my point is not that it doesn't make sense. My point is that this would be a perfect, because it could also be very much them taking the Alpha Flight Station angle of, that was the same thing. It was essentially Sword updated in another 5 years of, hey, here's we're protecting space now because cosmic threat.
But here's the interesting.
Well, my point though is not that. Okay. My point is that I see this as an opportunity to let Colby Smulders do something. And that character can very much
turn Maria Hill into
Abigail Brand.
Into Brand? But
you take pieces of that character and give her something to do, because she's been one of the most criminally underutilized characters. Like, Maria Hill as a character is awesome in the books, as far as she's either going to piss you off, but she's always interesting.
Yeah.
And she's been so dulled down for the MCU. Like, they give her nothing. And I would like them to take this opportunity.
Well, I don't think you have to worry so much about
this. She had a good moment in this one.
Because I think the key detail here is that Fury is up in space doing this work, and he's with a bunch of Skrulls. And he's obviously already implementing Skrulls into some kind of subterfuge to go and do stuff for him.
Yeah.
And I personally think this could be an interesting flip on what Secret Invasion is.
Yeah.
Because in Secret Invasion, we were all worried about, you know, the Skrulls being these evil things before Captain Marvel coming to Earth and after Endgame infiltrating Earth. Then Captain Marvel flipped that whole thing and made the Skrulls kind of sympathetic refugees just trying to survive. And it looks like they're still in this light when we see them in Far From Home, because they're working with Fury and they're doing this stuff and trying to help Spider-Man and trying to solve these problems.
Well, but here's this.
And let me just finish this thought. And like, knowing who Nick Fury is and what he's capable of, like, I wouldn't think this MCU version of Nick Fury and Sword would just be a station over Earth. Yeah. As opposed to Nick Fury getting proactive and putting out, like, sleeper cells and using that to go into the galaxy and kind of screw with things and mess with things in the name of safety.
I mean, what
if this is the start of the Kree-Skrull War? Like, we assume the Kree-Skrull War already happened based off the events that were in Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But if this is a thing that is taking, you know, hundreds of years potentially to grow, we may see the sides come to blow sooner than we think. And this may be, like, if the Skrull are rebuilding their numbers and all that jazz, like, that may still be a conflict that's going on.
But also, I mean, it does just show how easy it would be for them to do Secret Invasion.
And Secret Invasion is one of my favorite events of all time.
It's great.
I would love to see that.
Your first thought before you realize it's Talos in there is, they just did Secret Invasion, and then it becomes, it's Talos, we're good. He's talking to Nick Fury. But it's introducing that concept, because not everybody saw Captain Marvel. A lot of people have asked me what happened in that post-credit scene because they haven't seen it. They don't know who the Skrulls are. And I explained it to them. You know, not everybody watches every Marvel movie, but if you go watch Spider-Man and you didn't watch Captain Marvel, you're totally confused right now and you don't read comics. But so that just goes to plant that seed in people's head that these Skrulls are out there and another audience has now met them. And it goes to show how easy it would be for them to be posing as people on Earth or anywhere.
But there's also another weird layer to this scene in that when you first see Nick Fury, he is looking out on a beachfront that looks very much like the Tahiti stuff that they had Coulson, you know,
thought it was Tahiti,
you know, like locked into when they were bringing him back from the dead. So like, is this a brought back to life Nick Fury? Is this a
for the millionth time?
Is this a Nick Fury that's had his brain messed with, or like his memories messed with?
I think you're going deep down the rabbit hole.
But
Nick Fury staring at a beach thing because he doesn't want to look at his face.
Was it all a mysterious illusion?
There
is one thing that I would be interested to see them pursue is that, because like you guys have brought up how they reversed the way you look at Skrulls and the way you look at the Kree in the MCU. Even in more recent books, but also for a while, they've established that the Kree have come up with all kinds of technology to essentially, one, replicate what the Skrulls can do, and two, spot a Skrull from a mile away out of a group of normal people. It's something that the Skrulls have been constantly fighting to like keep the technology down so that they don't just completely overwhelm them. If you already set up the Kree as villains here, then having the Kree play the role of the Skrulls in Secret Invasion comics in the MCU, like essentially just completely flipping the dynamic and making the Skrulls the ones who are trying to find these sleeper cells and things like that, would be very interesting if they just went full, like just completely reversed the role.
I think that's what they're doing. I'm interested that what Jim's saying could, because I'm still, the big question mark for me is what Captain Marvel 2 will be about.
Yeah.
If it's in the 90s, if it's in the present, if it's a combination of the two, like things that happened in the 90s leading to what's happening to the present. Like, and so this scene kind of really got my mind going, but I just think the logic of it and the implications of it are, you give Nick Fury, spymaster extraordinaire, now the capability to kind of maneuver the galaxy and have a crew of, you know, the ultimate spies who we know are loyal to him for some very deep reasons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, what's he going to do with all this? And like, just hovering over Earth as a defense system doesn't seem like it's...
I mean, maybe he's just making an Avengers Space HQ.
But I think Sword could be, an MCU Sword could be like a spy organization.
Or what if, like, or space. What if someone from Earth
Agents
kills,
of S.H.I.E.L.D. reboot, Agents of Skrulls.
Someone from Earth kills Nick Fury, and then the Skrulls get mad, and that's what sets off Secret Invasion.
I mean,
who could kill him that would make them?
If you had told me a year, 2 years ago, like that would be the case, I would be like, oh, that sounds terrible. But now that actually like sounds legit just
I think they would have to affect both Nick Fury and Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And I honestly think we will see this second post-credit scene involving the Skrulls and the cosmic stuff and maybe Sword play out before we see the events of the first post-credit scene in the next Adventure for Spider-Man play out. I really do. I think it's going to be a while.
Yeah, I mean, me too. They're not in a rush.
Spider-Man.
This was a huge reveal. They're not in a rush.
I think that's going to play out before the rest of the Spider-Man stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm totally flipped. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. I don't know how much of a rush they are, and I don't know where this fits into the blueprint, so I can't.
This could very much be the next like Thanos reveal type.
Yeah.
Thing
if Marvel has shown anything, it's that they're patient. They'll take their time. But I still think that we'll at least start to see that develop more before we come back and revisit Spider-Man having his identity outed in the first post-credit scene.
Oh, Jim's not sure about that.
And Mysterio. I want Jim to share his theory. But that whole thing, I think, will come second to the next advancement in the Sword Skrull stuff. I don't think maybe we dive in fully.
I think so.
That comes first.
I think so, because I've got more to my crazy first post.
You are full tinfoil.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've got.
By the way.
And it's weird. Like, there are not many of the Marvel movies have really kind of done this for me, but this one I am like all tinfoil hat.
By the way, can we just say that, like, I just was thinking about it, like, yeah, the line that makes even more sense now from Nick Fury, when Peter's like trying to name people who should be handling this instead of him, and he's like, Captain Marvel, and he's like, don't invoke her name. And I was like, that's such a weird line for Nick Fury to say. And now like it totally makes sense. Yeah.
And it just makes sense that Fury was slipping, that he didn't catch Mysterio.
Yeah.
Fury would have called that.
Well, that's like the whole in-joke at the end.
He'd like, show me.
I handle it.
He goes, it looked real. It looked so real. How was I supposed to know?
Like, he would just be like, tell me how you traveled between Earths. Show it to me. Let me do it.
Yeah.
And Talos was just like, all right, true.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, I think and you're totally right because he's an alien, so he's seen a bunch of that. Like Talos has seen a bunch of that stuff.
Did.
So
yeah, Elementals. I saw that.
Happen. My cousin Chuck did that.
So I think it's interesting that Earth 616 was nothing more than an Easter egg because they're not Earth 616. They're Earth 19999 in the MCU. Yeah, but they're not Earth 616.
Yeah,
and Earth 833 is what,
and there's no multiverse.
It's the ultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that's an interesting thing. The story idea, the conceit that Mysterio is from a different universe is straight from that Brian Bendis, Sarah Pacelli Spider-Man series, where the ultimate universe Mysterio was an avatar being controlled by the 616. It was like a literally like a legit robot being controlled from the Mysterio of the 616 universe. So I thought that was a pretty cool like little story point that they
way to take it and make it
make it crazy. Yeah,
I mean they took a lot of elements like the
make it when, not what you just described as
when
that
Mysterio language. First like was introduced. He tried to frame Spider-Man, so he acted like Spider-Man, and then used it like with the Daily Bugle and all that. They kind of like took pieces of all of those stories. And put them into this.
I mean, that is one thing the MCU has been extremely. I mean, they took Arnim Zola and made that something.
But even, was, but even
when are we going like, to get
the, like Mysterio wanting what's to be, like, you know, in show wait. Business and like orchestrating the, you know, the scene where he's working out like that storm,
it might
thing, and he's just like, it needs more, you know, it's like it was a very like Michael Bay moment because it needs more damage or whatnot.
Yeah, double the damage.
Yeah,
I don't know about the choreography on this one.
Yeah,
like, that was just so great, like just the commentary on like blockbuster filmmaking and like visual effects and kind of invoking that Jake Gyllenhaal Nightcrawler persona where he's like so into this that he's like manufacturing his own realities. And he's just like, yeah, that was what was so great about the turn. He was like a twisted, like, you know, Steve Jobs, or I'm sure there's layers of people he knows in the industry, like a Michael Bay or somebody that he was kind of imitating. But that is such a great turn. And that scene, and my favorite character in this movie is actually Linda, the lady ironing his cape. So like Mysterio, Matt, like has everything about Mysterio's visual effects. Like they put a hologram over his like motion captured body and like that's his suit. Yeah. But for like practical things, he has a real kind of armor suit.
Yeah.
And like throughout the film, there's a running gag like that, like of all the people he gathered for this coalition he got of like former Stark employees. One of them is like a costume designer and throughout the film, she's always ironing his cape for his next, like, outward appearance, and they keep going back to
her. I could be shaking hands with the queen in 5 minutes.
Yeah, because he's like, yeah, I gotta get ready, like, because he's trying to plan, like, this visual effects thing, then he's gonna hop into his costume and then be over here to appear as Mysterio, and he's always like, Linda, like, where's my cape? And she's, like, ironing his cape, like, throughout the
movie. And also, to, like, the very end, where she's like, do I need to still be steaming out these wrinkles? And he's like, yes!
Yes, I need the costume.
Yeah, no, that was great. Like, little things like that were just, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, and those were the touches that kind of really made it a Spider-Man movie in some ways. But, yeah, that was great. Linda, one of the MVPs.
So,
heart and soul of the villain.
Hold on. But before we jump to that, the post-credit scene, there is one scene that I'd have to talk about just being a pure visual spectacle. Like, when you get a villain like Mysterio and there's the idea of everything he does, everything is an illusion and whatnot. The way that, like, the big fight scene before the one at the end between Mysterio and Spider-Man, where Mysterio just totally beats Spider-Man up, was gorgeous. And
what are you talking about?
Just like the one in the warehouse.
He thinks he has a drop.
Oh, he thinks he's talking to Nick Fury.
Yeah, like that whole sequence.
There's
and
like
everything
double,
that
triple
he does.
Reveals, great visual effects.
Spider-Man's piling on to him.
Yeah. And towards the end, then we're like, you know, Mysterio seemingly gets shot from behind from Nick Fury. And then, you know, it turns out.
My whole audience, when we saw it last week here, like clapped and cheered when they thought Mysterio got shot there.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I don't know. There's still like a lot of time left in this movie. There's no way he's dead.
But like that whole sequence was that was so like, creative, so brilliantly done.
That made that really cemented Mysterio as like a really great MCU villain, because that's a hard one to pull off. You always like, that's what I was wondering going into this film. I saw like the kind of Iron Man take they were doing that they showed you in the trailers, and I was like, I know there's going to be a heel turn, but I hope they actually do Mysterio stuff.
That it's more than just like Doctor Strange meets Iron Man.
Yeah, then just creating these like.
And it is so clear he inspired. I like how they made him look like he tried to copy his costume from Iron Man and Doctor Strange and Thor. Mm-hmm. When we did the set visit, they pointed that out. But I mean, even if they didn't, I think I still would have noticed. Like, it was obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was clearly influenced because he was trying to be one of those heroes.
Yeah. And like the sequence is like in a warehouse where Peter thinks he's like getting a drop of Mysterio, but they're kind of ready for him. And they have this, they use these Tony Stark drones to create both the holograms and the actual damage that's being done. And like, yeah, they put him through the ringer of just like this crazy kind of psychedelic, like weird, mm-hmm. surreal series of illusions that he keeps falling into while Mysterio's just like beating his ass. And like, yeah, there's even some tricks where you think like
zombie Iron Man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Zombie
he
Iron Man.
He puts him in Tony Stark's grave and Iron Man emerges as a zombie. There's Marvel Zombies call right
there's
there.
There's like things where you think like Nick Fury gets injured and then like that comes back at the end and saves Spider-Man from Mysterio, but it's just Mysterio still messing with him. And like, yeah, it's really great.
And it was heavy. Like Mysterio says to Peter, if you did better, Tony Stark would still be alive.
Dude, Mysterio, like honestly, probably top three, maybe top five Marvel villain for
behind
me.
Who, MCU Loki, villain? Thanos.
Yeah, I mean, he was, it was.
Obadiah Stane, I don't know.
He was really, really good. And like, I loved Michael Keaton as Vulture, but this was just like levels above.
But they're also, just from a base, like right. I would get so much more excited for a Mysterio appearance than I would a Vulture. I mean, Vulture is just right. so plain and whatever.
That's why made him very interesting.
But Michael Keaton made Vulture menacing and scary in the same way that Jake Gyllenhaal is making
Mysterio. Yeah, but they're total opposites. Like Vulture's like street, down, neighborhood, separate guy. Mysterio's like up here, grand.
I mean, that's
spectacle.
The same as, but if you're ranking the villains, you can't compare Mysterio and Thanos. You can't, it's apples and oranges, but you can still compare them. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, from a power level standpoint, yeah, sure.
Yeah, no.
It's totally different, but just from a pure on performance and just.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal was fantastic.
Character that I thought was the most fleshed out. Like, he was incredibly fleshed out for the very little that they really gave. Like, they obviously in that one scene where he just explains how he got to where he is, they give you a lot, but everything else before that and leading up to it is like, I kind of still believe that there's a little good in Mysterio just in based off the conversations that he had, but that could just be him being a good actor and doing acting things to get people to go. I really loved it.
Well, that was the kind of thing that I think was interesting. It's like, it's acting. It's not, it's a little bit of truth. It's a little bit of lie. Like, this was his idealized version of who he wanted to measure up to be. I mean, that's his whole story. Like, he was resentful because he thought he was a genius on par with Tony Stark, and that Tony Stark just simply kind of screwed him over and gave him the shaft, which was like the whole kind of unifying thing for his whole crew was like, yeah, we are people who are just as smart as Tony Stark, or, you know, really smart except for this one guy, and now like he's gone and it's our chance to rise and become great too. And like, that's his whole motivation. So like, yeah, from his dress to just the way he actually pretends to be a hero, there is some probably overlap between like where he is. And because he's not evil, like he doesn't hate Peter. Like he actually really does
like Peter.
Genuinely like Peter and Spider-Man. And because he says he feels bad for tricking him and like playing the kid to get the Eden glasses. And he's just, and he even says so. He's like, and that's like a genuine moment. He's not being an ass. He's just like, you know, I feel like almost sorry for the poor sap that I had to do it this way, but like, it is what it is. And so
do you think he's dead?
I don't think he's dead.
No.
He's dead. I was actually going to ask about that.
It's a very theatrical kind of death. It wasn't as solemn and heavy as a villain death.
He'll probably come back as someone else, and then it'll be revealed that it's him all along.
Yeah. Or It's just revealed that the body, I mean, the popular thing is that, like, you know, he's got more to, there's more to this little organization, and it's like somebody like Chameleon or something like that, or just
leading
another
into a Sinister Six type thing.
Or Vulture might be trying to kill Spider-Man when really it seemed like Vulture came around and like protected his identity when he was in the prison cell. So then you could find out that Michael Keaton is really trapped somewhere and he's willing to team up with Spider-Man to fight Mysterio and a different version of the Sinister Six. Like, Vulture's a good guy. It's, and there's other Sinister Six members who are trying to kill him.
Yeah. I would think it would be, I'd be more interested to see Vulture start off as being part of the Six, but being the one who ultimately turns and kind of saves Peter. That'd be kind of a good full circle way to bring that back around. Plus, Peter needs a new dad. His current one's dead.
But the first post-credit scene, if Mysterio is dead, how does he send a message or a fake message to make Peter think that he did?
That's the whole thing.
Okay, so there's a few
out
things.
His identity and reframe him as a villain.
Right. So the first post-credit scene is Peter and MJ swinging around New York.
Which is great because it was like the first set photo we all saw.
Yeah,
and had no idea. Like,
and it's in all the trailers too. I mean, the ending of the movie is in the trailers.
I mean, you get a great nod to the Spider-Man PS4 game in that, where he takes the selfie.
Yeah,
and it's the photo from that they use in stills for the game. Peter drops MJ off in front of Madison Square Garden.
In front of my apartment in New York. On the corner of 33rd and 8th.
Right, like, on Kofi's
Kofi's
right
doorstep. Stay
right
from
the post office.
Stay right there on
that corner.
The way you read in the local. I knew exactly. The bar I drink at every day was like right up above them, and I was just like,
aww.
So sad. I'm far from home.
It has to be a lie because those screens don't actually show news.
Well, right.
No,
so they get jumped right in front of Madison Square Garden. Just as Peter's about to leave, a news thing comes in, and it's the report that Mysterio, you know, in the fight with Mysterio and Spider-Man, a video has been sent in, presumably from Mysterio, where it looked like he recorded in the very last bits of his fight, said,
execute them all.
There's
talking about
a few things that painted Peter in a very negative light.
Yeah,
but also said, you know, the identity of Spider-Man is Peter Parker. Boom, J.K. Simmons comes in reporting from DailyBugle.net, being like, Spider-Man's a menace, Mysterio's a hero, he died a hero, blah blah blah. My theory is, well, so there's a scene right before they cut away from everything with the dude who's been helping Mysterio from Iron Man 1, I can't remember his name, uploading something to a drive that gets pulled out.
Mm-hmm. I think it was downloading. I think it's a download.
Something was being moved to a drive.
Data was being moved here.
Okay.
But, and so one, you go one way and say, oh, that footage was the footage that, you know, was being uploaded into the drive. I want to believe that it was actually the next sort of simulation that Mysterio was going to do just to screw with Peter Parker.
Okay.
Or more. Or more. The future plans that we don't know yet.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That it necessarily didn't happen.
But there is something lingering that was shown intentionally.
Yes.
Yeah. But I feel like Mysterio's whole thing to the camera is I think they took the footage of Spider-Man on the bridge in the actual fight, and that's why I think he's still alive, and I think he recorded that other part later and they put it together and put it out where he's just saying, like, where he pretends like, you know, Spider-Man's killing him and doing all this stuff, and that's why I think he's probably still alive.
Yeah.
So your theory is that...
My theory is that that whole scene
is a simulation.
So the world doesn't know Peter Parker.
The world does not know Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
I don't know.
So, question then: when do we find out the answer to that? Like, what's the is it? Do we wait for Spider-Man sequel?
Day. Yeah, I would say the in the next movie.
I think your tinfoil hat is
not
a little
before?
Too tight.
Not before
Spider-Man graduation day.
No, because there's nothing coming up that happens as far as the MCU is concerned. Like present day,
Strange 2 wouldn't be.
What do you mean present day? We don't know what's coming.
Well, but that's what I mean. But Black Widow presumably,
that's why I think the cosmic stuff will be explored before the Spider-Man stuff is explored.
Yeah,
Doctor Strange probably isn't going to take place in New York City.
No,
Thor is with the Guardians. The Guardians are out in space. Black Panther is in Wakanda, Black Widow is in the past, the Eternals are throughout time and all over the world and maybe probably on Earth.
Yeah, they're like
probably
in cosmic.
Shang-Chi won't be in New York, probably. There is no New York story on the horizon. There's no need for a New York story on the horizon besides maybe the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, we don't even have like a really...
know if that's coming.
Yeah, but like, not even why, like a really grounded like, American-based...
Why MCU wouldn't Shang-Chi or Doctor Strange have some... I get that you're eventually going to like, especially with Doctor Strange's
case. Well, the same way Thor the Dark World didn't call the Avengers when there was a crazy event happening in London.
No, but the thing is, though, even like... Doctor Strange, for as trippy as that got, there's still going to be little elements of being in New York. Like, there's going to be little spots where you're at the Sanctum or something. Like, I know these are going to be bigger experiences, and Shang-Chi's the same way. Like, yes, that character has so much more to him than just being in New York City or being part of the Heroes for Hire or things like that, but you're still going to get those little small moments, and in those moments is when, oh yeah, did you hear the news about Peter? So like those little asides that happen in almost Marvel movie.
Maybe you do get a little
movie.
Nod to it.
Yeah,
maybe right. You do get a nod
it won't
to
be
it.
Explored.
Those movies, I think those movies can be totally fine without acknowledging it.
Agreed.
Doctor Strange doesn't care about Spider-Man.
Right. Let's take a little break.
I think it's the best Spider-Man movie. I love it top to bottom, and I was worried about my enthusiasm for Marvel post-Endgame, having been invested for more than 10 years and everything finally paying off, and they hooked me right back in.
Got me. I mean, I feel the exact same way. I was not... We've talked about this for a couple of weeks on the show about how we were not necessarily excited for it. Then we got the big post-Endgame trailer. This movie got me right back in, hook, line, and sinker.
I think that I still like Homecoming better because I like the intimate neighborhood Spider-Man story. Mm-hmm. But that's not to take away from Far From Home, which is a really good Spider-Man movie, really good epilogue, and the perfect, I think I said on Twitter, digestif for Avengers Endgame, which because it takes some of the heaviness. It does not ignore the heaviness of that story, but it also kind of brings us back to a fun, kind of adventurous Marvel Cinematic Universe experience with the best Spider-Man that we have. So, total win for me.
I'm more excited to see it now that I've talked to you guys. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was very tepid going into this.
You're welcome, Sony and Marvel.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited to actually see it more now because I'm looking forward to seeing how all these things play out. And actually knowing what happens, I can look for some of those little nods and get
You're
it.
You're just be happy like, that there's Captain Marvel links.
I mean, part of it's, yeah. I'm not going to lie that, like, Talos is one of my favorite parts of that movie. So, yeah, seeing him again would be great.
Can't well, at least now you get to enjoy it the whole time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's actually kind of cool going in. It's almost like going in after a first viewing already. Like, I go in and I can spot those little nods and get enjoyment out of it, even though I don't, you know, not supposed to know typically.
All right, so needless to say, I think it's a pretty easy consensus that you guys, I mean, I don't know why you're listening to this if you haven't seen it, but in case you are, go see Spider-Man Far From Home. If you've been on the fence, it's worth it. All right, so that'll do it for this special edition of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you for riding with us. If you guys want to jump into the full experience because you just jumped in here to get some Spider-Man spoilers, we post new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com. You can subscribe to our RSS feed for regular updates about the show, or you can subscribe on your favorite listening platform. We are on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists, or tell any of your Amazon Alexa devices to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast, and it will start playing for you. If you want to reach us on social media, hit us up at the hashtag Comic Book Nation. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
Find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Brandon Davis BD.
And at Jim Viscardi.
And leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, and we will read it in subsequent episodes of the show and our regular episodes. And if we read your review, we will send you some comic book swag or some Comic Book Nation swag. So be sure to leave us that 5-star review. You guys have been doing a great job of that lately. Thank you for joining in for this talk and talking some MCU with us on this Spider-Man Far From Home spoilers podcast. We hope to see you guys in the next regular episode. We're out.
Deuces.